this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. This is episode 34, and I have so much to talk about, but I'm only giving myself 15 minutes, and then I'm cutting myself off and passing you on to Kelly, who is today's interviewee. But oh my gosh, okay, let me see. Can I get this all done? A lot of you live in the Pasadena, LA area. Do you know about the play, Playing Monopoly with God? It is a one-woman show coming to Pasadena about postpartum psychosis. And I haven't seen it yet because this is going to be the first show in California, but just based on other people I know who have seen it, and it started in Montana and went to Seattle and Oregon, and now it's coming to California. And the trailer looks amazing. It looks like the sort of night where you're just going to either be laughing hysterically or crying. And I've met the woman twice now, Melissa, who is the producer, director, writer, and star of the show, about her experiences with postpartum psychosis. And she is just glorious. I'm in her presence and I immediately feel comfortable. And I mean, maybe I am growing up, or maybe I am becoming a better version of myself, because I've always, before postpartum depression, I was just so guarded and kept my feelings inside. And now I meet people and it's just like I'm immediately there and present, and I just felt like myself with her, and I felt like she was being herself with me. And I think it's just going to be an awesome performance. So if you're anywhere in the area and you are so inclined, Playing Monopoly with God, you can go to playingmonopolywithgod.com to see the trailer or get tickets, or to urge Melissa to come to your part of the world, because she and her husband and 4-year-old are on tour, and they've got this big, massive RV, and I'm going to have her on the show later, but got a couple other interviews coming for you. So, check it out. Okay, I have to talk about postpartum progress, and I don't know where I'm going to go. For those of you who don't know, Postpartum Progress announced that it's closing its doors yesterday. Am I losing track of time? Or 2 days ago? Monday. Oh my gosh. It's Wednesday. It's been just whiplash. So 2 Mondays ago, what's that, 9 days ago, tickets went on sale for Warrior Mom Ambassadors for the Warrior Mom Conference next November in Colorado. And I bought my ticket, and it was exciting and exhilarating, and I was on such a high, and it's like, oh my gosh, it doesn't matter what happens between now and next November, because I know I have the conference to look forward to, and I'm going to be seeing, and, you know, people started like saying that they were going, and it was exciting to see the friends who would be there, the people who I hadn't gotten to connect with at the last conference that I would now get to connect with. And if you hear weird popping sounds in the background, we are not under attack here in Pasadena. Nathan is just making popcorn. He's making me dinner right now. He's amazing that way. Okay. So lucky. Sorry, I'll stop bragging now about my jackpot husband. So I was so elated and excited for the Warrior Mom Conference. And Friday comes around, last Friday, so like 5 days ago, and the tickets went on sale to the general public, and people were buying their tickets, and there was all this excitement. And then Saturday, I wake up, and there are a bunch of posts on Facebook. For those not active with the Postpartum Progress community, Postpartum Progress had a big presence on Facebook with online support forums and for peer-to-peer support. And there was the Warrior Mom Ambassador Program, and then we had a Facebook group for the people who were the Warrior Mom Conference alumni and people going to the next conference. And there is this amazing woman, Graham Seabrook. And Graham was like the moderator for the Warrior Mom Conference Facebook page. So last year I got to slowly get to know her as she did lots of postings and video chats. And we developed our own personal friendship, and I met her at the end of the conference, and we had breakfast with a bunch of other people on the last day, and I love her. I think she's fabulous. And she announced that she was resigning from Postpartum Progress. She had been hired at the beginning of the year to do some sort of staff contracting work, and she did, I'm futzing around with the volume right now because I don't know if I'm recording as loud as I usually should. So I really hope the first like 5 minutes of this recording isn't like on mute. Or maybe we do hope for that. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Okay, so Graham said she was resigning from Postpartum Progress and removing herself from the Facebook groups. Boom, done. And I immediately felt sick. I was like, something is wrong. My whole body was just telling me this is not good. And this is something I'm learning to do. I mean, I am a lawyer. I'm not a practicing lawyer, but, you know, really once a lawyer, always a lawyer. I went to law school. I was a practicing lawyer for 8 years. And, you know, I was a litigator, and that's about evidence and hearsay. And there's rules and there's procedures and there's standards of care and causes of action. And I have that legal training and that rational brain. And my brain was saying, don't overreact. And my body was saying, holy shit, what's going on? And Graham shortly after posted a blog post that it didn't name the organization, but if you knew Graham, you knew what she was talking about. And I'll post to it in the show notes about she was referring to The Last Straw and how she'd had an interaction with the CEO and chairman of the board of Postpartum Progress that had been a racial microaggression. And she was done. And she talks about all sorts of stuff in her experiences as a Black woman and how this was really just a straw. This experience was a straw. And you can look at it and be like, what's the big deal? And that's the thing about microaggressions. You can look at them and be like, really, what's the big deal? But it was just her whole life. And being a Black woman married to a white man and their children, she goes to Whole Foods and people will come up to her and assume she's the kid's nanny. And that is something she has to live with. Just people ignoring her at her son's preschool because she's the only Black mom there. And so this little experience came in from the head of Postpartum Progress, and it could really, really seem like a little, like, just like a nothing. But based on her whole life, it was just very degrading. And all it was, really, I hate to say all it was. This is just such a tricky thing happening. But basically, there was a Facebook group that wasn't open yet for the 2017 Warrior Mom Conference. And the head of Postpartum Progress was disappointed about this and made some comment about, Graham said something about, it's all on Facebook, and I feel like such a murky historian because people were posting screenshots. And Graham basically said, like, this, the plan was da-da-da, and the head of Postpartum Progress came out and said, well, like, why didn't the CEO know what the staff knew? Something about her, it was something, a comment, a bitchy remark about her being the CEO and Graham being staff. And she came back and said, it wasn't a comment about you, but this is a whole he said, she said thing. Although it's all she said, she said, but it's not, it's on Facebook. So, and yet it is, because this is like, the awfulness of Facebook, because there's no intonation. There's no, you don't see the person's facial expressions. You don't see what was going on. You're just getting a sentence. And Graham was really hurt by the sentence, enough so that she resigned. And She explained in her blog post why it was a big deal for her resigning. She had volunteered and poured countless hours into the organization, and she's been building her own coaching business. And by stepping away, she was giving up the opportunity to have Postpartum Progress someday come forward and give her their stamp of approval. So Graham resigns. I spent Saturday just feeling sick about it, and I was in a bitchy mood with Nathan and taking out bullshit on him. And then blaming it on Zoloft weaning, but then finally realizing, no, I'm just upset about what's going on with Graham. Another Postpartum Progress employee, Jasmine, also a woman of color, resigned as not so much an act of solidarity with Graham. Well, an act of solidarity, but also based on her own experiences. Does that make sense? So after Jasmine resigned, and she is not some socialite who was just didn't need the salary from Postpartum Progress. Like, her family needed that salary to feed their children. And yet she resigned. And that to me just said, holy shit. And my body, my whole body, my intuition was just like, this is wrong. So on Sunday, I resigned. I resigned from being a Warrior Mom ambassador, and I made some sort of public comment on Facebook, which is there, and I stand by it. Here I am rambling to you, and I don't remember the exact details. I think I said something about ignoring my brain and following what my body and soul were telling me to do. And not my training. I mean, lawyer for so many years. And, you know, I talked about it briefly that day with my parents, and they were like, why? And I couldn't articulate it, and I still can't. I mean, or I can, and the reason is because I had to. My body told me, my intuition told me something's off. And then things came out in a post. There were a couple of public posts from Postpartum Progress about, like, oh, well, we have this cultural competency expert and like a consultant. And that to me was like, why would you? It just made no sense to me that an organization helping, that's not that big, but that's helping women with mental illness. You know, we do fundraising, but like last year's Climb Out of Darkness raised something in like the 400,000 ballpark, which is a lot of money. But then again, it's not so much money that you can be tossing money at a cultural competency consultant. That made me feel like, okay, I'm really glad I stepped away and that I resigned from being a Climb leader this year. And I resigned from being an ambassador mom because, you know, as the day went on for a couple days, people just kept coming forth. A couple moms came forth on Facebook, women of color, that they had worked with the organization and felt mistreated. And I can't do that. I can't say, here I am an ambassador for this organization where women of color are coming forward and saying they don't feel welcome. And it resonated with me because I went to the conference last October in Atlanta, which has a significant Black population, and there were almost no people of color there. It was mostly white women, and there were a few exceptions. There were. But here you are in Atlanta, which is the headquarters for Postpartum Progress. You would think there would be some a bigger presence of Black women. At least that's what I would have hoped for. And it was a bit of a white sorority going on. And oh, I could talk about that forever. And I'm at the 13 and a half minute mark. So I'll table that for another day. It's just everything came to me. This was a decision I made based on my intuition and what my body was saying and on relationships I had built. And it's still something I'm coming to terms with, because the implication is that the head of Postpartum Progress is racist. That's the implication. And I'm struggling with that because she has done so much good for the community of women suffering from perinatal mood disorders. It's really, really tough for me to be like, wait, she's hurting women of color who are feeling mistreated and don't feel safe in the organization. But then she's doing so much good. So I'm having a lot of cognitive dissonance trying to sort this out in my mind. And having a lot of, and people have been posting on Facebook, so I'm not alone with this, but I feel really bad for the head of postpartum progress. Because, okay, so I haven't finished the story. Monday, postpartum progress just announced that we're done. We regret to inform you that by unanimous board decision, we are shutting down. And the blog and Facebook, the blog and website with all its like history of archives of resources is staying. So that's there. I'm over the 15-minute mark, and that's okay. We're all friends here. So that's staying, but otherwise, the nonprofit's going away. There'll be no Climb Out of the Darkness this year. There'll be no Warrior Mom Conference. Refunds are being issued for the tickets. Donations are being returned for the climb. It's just, holy shit. People were calling for the head of Postpartum Progress to resign and for the board to be replaced and for new people to be hired. And, you know, they decided to shut down, and anything else I can say on that would be speculation. And it's all still very surreal to me. I know a lot of moms out there are mourning the loss of Postpartum Progress. And I'm having reactions along the line of what was going on with an organization where people are so invested in it that the shutting down of the organization causes them such distress. But the thing is, Postpartum Progress saved a lot of women's lives. It didn't save mine, though. So I don't have that emotional connection. I came to Postpartum Progress like 9 or 10 months after I was hospitalized, after I was started Zoloft, after I stopped feeling suicidal, after I stopped having dark thoughts about throwing Pippa. So the connection I have with the organization is just not the same as women who say, and I believe them 110%, that Postpartum Progress saved their life. Postpartum Progress might have contributed because I found various articles online that told me what was going on with me and helped me have the courage to finally speak up and finally make an appointment with my doctor. But I don't remember specifically if it was Postpartum Progress. And I do remember making a point of going to like WebMD and anything I could find online, checking and cross-referencing multiple pages. So there wasn't one website that I can point to say this organization saved my life. It wasn't. It was I saved my life. I did it, okay? But I can understand why for some women, Postpartum Progress saved their life. And I can understand, we've lost a community. And I really belonged with the Postpartum Progress community. And after a lifetime of trying to fit in, and I know I'm going all Brene Brown on you, but belonging just felt so right and so good. And I do miss that, but I don't. I'm saying it out loud and I'm realizing that's not true because I have all these friends I've made and these women I've connected with, and I know as much as I am sad that the Warrior Mom Conference is not happening and that the climb is gone, there's just a lot of feelings going on. I guess there's some relief. It's complicated, but relief that it wasn't like Graham resigned and then it was like everyone shrugged and said, oh, all right, what the hell? And that Graham wrote a post and people were like, she's overreacting. Like there was a lot of rallying behind Graham. And I find that very hopeful. I feel bad for the head of Postpartum Progress. I think about her. And she gave so much of herself to this organization and now it's gone. And she's been accused of horrible things. And that can destroy a person. And I hope she has the strength to rise above this. And she had posted on her personal page that her sister-in-law died about a week or two ago. So I can't, I can't even imagine what she's going through. That her husband lost his sister, her children lost their aunt, and now suddenly this organization that gave so much meaning to her life, and really what is life but the hunt, the quest for love and meaning, and she had that answered, and now it's just been ripped away from her. And I can't help but empathize and feel bad for her, even at the same time saying, like, well, if I believe these women of color coming forward, and my whole body is telling me that there's something rotten with the organization, and so I had to walk away. But to see it end, and to see this woman's, like, career possibly come to an end, I mean, I'm speculating now. Okay, so I think 20 minutes, I think that was enough. I also just heard the crack of my husband opening a new bottle of soda, which means he's pouring himself a drink. We don't do whiskey here, we just do soda. And it means the tilapia is ready. And it means it's time for me to pass you over to Kelly, who is, you know, you're going to just find out who Kelly is from this interview. She's awesome. I hadn't spoken to her before, and we were both at the Warrior Mom Conference last October. I wish I'd gotten to meet her in... If we met, it was in passing. I wish I'd gotten to meet her more, but hey, Skype, cell phones, we've got it. Now we've got this interview. And Kelly had intrusive thoughts were a big part of her experience with postpartum anxiety and depression. And she had five children. So you're going to see sort of her journey through the five children and how the mood disorder manifested itself at different points. And thank you, Kelly, so much for your honesty and your time. I know you are just helping so many women by sharing your story. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for asking.
So Graham told me I need to just ask you about being such a genius, but that's probably not your favorite place to start the interview.
I don't know about that. I know a lot about a lot of things, but they're not always the most useful information.
But you were a lawyer in your past life?
Yes, I was. I graduated from law school. So it's kind of like a long, convoluted story, which I will try to summarize as much as humanly possible. But when I was in law school, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. And so he went through surgery and radiation treatment, and we were basically told that if we wanted to be able to have kids at all, we needed to try then, because he could end up never being able to have kids. And so I got pregnant through this, like, miracle thing. I mean, we only had a month to try. And then I ended up having a miscarriage. So from that point on, basically, like, my whole worldview shifted and, like, all of my priorities changed, because up until then I wanted to be a lawyer and I was going to do all of these amazing lawyer things and it was going to be rad. Like, I was going to have all this money and all this power and all this influence and pay off my loans. It was going to be great. But then he got sick, and after I lost the baby, I got really hyper-focused on wanting to have kids. And we were diagnosed infertile later on, and then 3 weeks after we got the official diagnosis, I found out that I was actually pregnant, and the doctors were just wrong. And my son was born premature. He wasn't, like, super premature, but he was premature enough that he was in the NICU, and he was intubated and all that. He was born 3 days after I graduated. So I never sat for the bar exam. So, yes, I am technically... I have the education, and I worked as a in many different legal capacities back then, but I have never actually been a lawyer, quote-unquote.
Well, you saved that. I'm a lawyer, too, so you saved that scarring.
Right. Yeah, I've got the loan balance of a lawyer, but none of the actual work experience.
Yeah.
Well, not the work experience that paid me. I did lots of internships, but...
I finally have stopped saying that I'm a recovering lawyer.
Right.
I think I've recovered from that phase of my life.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because of the people that I graduated with, I would say maybe only a third of them are still practicing.
Yeah, it's a...
Everybody else has gotten out.
Yeah, it's a traumatizing profession.
It really is. And, you know, I think, I want to believe that most people go into it wanting to do good and wanting to, you know, help others and whatever. But then by the time you graduate and you owe as much as you owe when you get out, it's like, you know, you basically have to sell out in order just to survive. And
then just selling out means, you know, here's your soul.
Right, basically. And, yeah, I mean, there aren't very many of my law school classmates that are still practicing. You know, and it's unfortunate. I think they kind of misrepresent the profession to incoming students. So.
Yeah.
But that's another subject.
Yeah, I could do a whole podcast on law school survivors.
Right, and why not go to law school? Here are 27 reasons.
Not go to law school, the podcast. So, how old's your son now?
He is 15. He's almost 16.
So,
it's been a long time.
Yeah, I kind of want to, like, now hit pause and, like, pick your brain on, like, when is my daughter going to not be an asshole, and when will she be back into that phase?
Well, it depends on the kid, because, like, they all have their moments, I think, and my oldest is, he's a good kid, like, I tell him he broke me in gently, because the next few are not as easy as he was. And my daughters are 14, and then I have one that'll be 13 in April. So I'll be 12 in April, sorry.
Oh, my God. So you had three under four at
one
point?
Yeah, three teenagers, yeah.
Oh, three teenagers, oh, my God. Yeah, that's why we're done with two. So did you
have a toddler.
Oh, you have a toddler, too? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I have five. So I have a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old, 8-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
You are brave.
I'm nuts.
Brave is often the synonym for nuts.
So, right, brave is a positive way to spin it, yes.
So which of the five did you have a maternal mood disorder with?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that I kind of had this epiphany when I was at the conference last year, of all places, that I think I developed form of PTSD or somewhat related to PTSD after my miscarriage, because it was a pretty traumatic miscarriage. And then I developed, I already had anxiety that was pre-existing, and it just kind of snowballed once I had the miscarriage. Because when I did end up getting pregnant with my oldest, with my son, I was basically like debilitated by the anxiety, but I didn't really recognize that it was anything unusual. And I was constantly waiting for like bad news, or like somebody was going to tell me there was something wrong, or there was something wrong with him, or, you know, whatever. And it was like just always this nagging feeling like that there was something that was, you know, things are great now, but they're not going to stay great because of what I had been through before. But then when he was born and he was premature, like, I got really hyper-focused on just making sure that he was fine. And so I kind of threw myself into breastfeeding, because I felt like that was the only thing I could do when he was in the hospital, was pop. Because he was, you know, I couldn't even hold him for, like, 4 days or something. And so I felt like there wasn't anything else I could do, so, well, I could do this. And so I kind of over-dedicated myself to that. You know, and I had the anxiety before, I had the anxiety afterwards. I don't know that it was necessarily related to the pregnancy itself. And then my second, she was a shitload of colic. And, which, you know, at this point, I don't even want to say that it's colic. I think that she was just very prone to overstimulation. And so she cried constantly until she was about 6 months old. And there were little hints of postpartum depression with her. But with her, I always just chalked it up to, like, how hard of a baby she was.
Mm-hmm.
So I rationalized it in my head like that. And then after she was born is when I became a doula. Because I had such crappy birth experiences with both of my kids, I didn't want other moms to have to go through that. So I became a labor and delivery, a birth doula, which is kind of a misnomer because I do most of my work with postpartum anyway. but I'm technically trained as a labor doula. And then my third was when it hit completely. So I had my second daughter in 2005. And right after she was born, we moved to Colorado. We moved from California to Colorado. So we moved with three little kids. Like, my son at the time was only four. And then my daughter was two, and I had a newborn. And the baby, she was perfect. Like, she was the easiest baby in the universe. She was super mellow. She, like, never cried. She didn't have any trouble eating. She was really an easy baby. But I was not in a good place. Like, I, after we moved, didn't have a support group, any kind of a support network here at all, because I was new to the area. And, you know, I can't say for sure when it really hit me, but I started developing intrusive thoughts. And that was my primary symptom with her, was intrusive thoughts. So, and that went on for over a year before I recognized what was really going on and admitted that there was something wrong. And this is, you know, I was a doula. I knew better. I knew there was something wrong. And I thought that I was smart enough that I could fix it myself. I thought that I was strong enough that I didn't need help. And I thought that if I told people what was happening, that they would think that I was just crazy, or that I was a danger to my kids, or that I was going to hurt them. And none of that was ever true. I just really, really, really wanted to believe that it would go away magically on its own. And the opposite happened. It actually kept getting worse and worse and worse, to the point where any exterior input in my life, whether it was like a song or a TV show or a movie or something I read in the newspaper, or literally anything, I would turn it into a way for me to have a vision of hurting the baby. So it got to the point where I was in bed reading one night, and I was reading a book, which I don't know if I should say the name of the book, but because it's totally unrelated to the book. But in this book, there was a scene where the family in the story goes to the zoo, and I don't even remember what exactly happens in the book, but my brain immediately took that and ran with it and presented me with a vision of me throwing the baby over the railing to the alligator pit. And I started screaming in bed, and I was crying hysterically, and my husband was like, whoa, what is wrong with you? Like, he had no idea, because I was completely functional, and worked really hard to hide it, and he had no idea until then. And at this point, she was already over a year old, and his first question, of course, was, was I safe? Was I going to hurt myself? Was I going to hurt her? Was I going to hurt the other kids? And I said, no, of course not. And then he was like, okay, well, you need to talk to somebody. And so the next day, I reached out to a couple midwife friends of mine that were still back in California. And then I met with a psychiatrist here locally. And, it's for me, once I admitted that that's what it was, it almost immediately stopped. The act of suppressing it is what gave it the power. So very quickly after I told my husband what was going on and I talked to the psychiatrist, the visions went from being like vivid and real to being more of like a replay, like a fuzzy replay. It's hard to describe, but it was more like I was having a memory of having them from that point on, than they were being like present and real and current. And when I went and I met with the psychiatrist, I told her what was happening, and I told her that I was doing, I told her that I knew what was wrong, and I told her that I was pretty sure that I had postpartum depression, and that, I had the OCD variety of it, because I had intrusive thoughts, and And she said, yeah, if that's what you have. And she said, and you might need to be medicated. And I said, I know. And it was a very surreal conversation, because it was like, you know, I at that point realized that I had been spending so much of my energy trying to pretend like this thing wasn't happening. That once I admitted that it was, then it kind of magically got better. And I don't really have an explanation for why that is. It just was.
Talk is just so powerful.
Yeah.
I know I did, like, a huge part of my healing happened after I started telling people. Because mm-hmm. there was a whole just layer of shame festering.
Right. Well, and then, you know, a lot of it for me, you know, once I told my husband, and I had talked to a therapist, and I had talked to a few of my midwife friends, you know, it was about a year before I told anyone else. And the first people that I told were my closest friends from back home, because we had gone back to California for a visit. And it was comical, because it was one of those, like, everybody's in the backyard drinking shots of tequila. Oh yeah, hey, by the way. And then, like, they would share, like, this is what catastrophic things happening in my life, and this is how my life's gone to crap, and oh yeah, by the way, you guys, this happened to me. And you know, and it wasn't until they were the first people I told, them and the woman that I had partnered with when I was a doula in San Diego, you know, I told them first, and it was kind of like, you know, all of them had, their first response was like, well, why didn't you tell us sooner? Like, well, because that was just part of the deal. Like, I just didn't want anybody to know, because I felt so ashamed of it. Because, and part of the reason I felt worse about it was because I knew better. You know, because I am a doula, and this is what I'm trained to recognize in other women, and I couldn't even recognize it in myself.
Yeah, I mean, it just changes your brain chemistry.
Yeah.
And suddenly you go in thinking, I've got this ABC, and then it just knows. It's like it just knows how to fuck with everyone, like, in the way that they're right. most susceptible to being messed with.
Right, and it's not a good thing to not be in control of your own thoughts. Like, it's a very unsettling situation to be in, especially because, like, my default is I'm a pretty type A person. I'm kind of a control freak, so the fact that I wasn't able to just tell my brain to knock it off, it threw me for a loop. So, you know, and then it was, I didn't tell anyone else, you know, aside from my husband and a handful of friends, for several more years. And it was the first way, the way that I actually told it, everybody else, was that I wrote about it. because I had been blogging for a few years by that point. And I don't even remember what precipitated it or why I finally outed myself. I'd have to go back and look, but I don't think I wrote about it for the first time until after my fourth child was born. You know, and with him, I had it a tiny bit. It was not that bad. It was okay. It was totally manageable. And, like, I kind of knew what was coming, and so I was more prepared for it. And, you know, by that point, I had more support network locally. And, but I was afraid with him that it would get bad when I weaned him. Because I know that, you know, can be kind of a trigger for some women, too, because it's another big, huge hormone drop-off. And it was my fear of it coming back that prompted me to write about it the first time. And then, of course, like, you know, as soon as I posted it, you know, all my family would be reading, you know, like, friends from far away would be reading the blog, because they'd be expecting, like, completely non-exciting updates about the kids. And then all of a sudden, here's this, like, diary of the mouth. Oh yeah, by the way, this thing is really wrong with me. Here, world, look at this. And the first person that called me was my dad. And he was really worried. And I think he was hurt that I hadn't told him earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he understood why I hadn't. And it just, that interaction with my dad, it kind of changed a lot of things for us, because I think he started to see me more as, you know, an adult with, like, actual issues and stuff, and where up until then, I had always just been his daughter, and I think then he, I don't know, it changed the dynamic of our relationship a lot, because he was the first person to call. And, yeah, so ever since then, I've been writing about it, because every time I write about it, it helps me, and I always, 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 even then, even when the only people reading my blog were family and close friends, every single time I'd write about it, somebody would send me a message or call me, and they'd be like, hey, so this happened to me. And, you know, and that's when I started to see the power in sharing my story, that it wasn't just something to keep me marginally well, that it could help other people.
And the people, I feel like, who actually reach out to you represent, like, probably 50 or 100 people who are thinking the same thing, but just
right
don't have the time, right, or they have too much anxiety to write back to you.
Right, or they're, you know, caught in this whole shame spiral of, like, what are people going to think about me? And they're going to think I'm a terrible mother, and they don't, you know, whatever. They're going to try to bathe me in holy water. You know, so, yeah, I mean, and even now, you know, every time, and now, because I have such a larger audience with my blog, and I don't write nearly as often as I should, but when I do write about this kind of stuff, you know, I'll get this is a huge influx of messages from people, you know, and sometimes they want to tell me their stories, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they just say thank you for making me feel like I'm not alone. You know, I've had quite a few women who, you know, their kids have grown, have told me that they had symptoms of intrusive thoughts and never, ever realized that it could be postpartum depression.
Well, yeah, because you think your thoughts are your own, and that you've created them, right, and it's come from, like, some darkness in your soul.
Right.
And it doesn't occur to you that it's... Because I had the intrusive thoughts, too, of hurting my daughter, and it didn't occur to me at the time that I thought it was, like, a morality failing, not neurons or, you know, hormones are firing away and putting these thoughts in my head.
Right, and you really start to think that you are a bad mom, because a good mom wouldn't have these kinds of thoughts, and, you know, so that just kind of perpetuates the shame, because then you don't want to tell anybody, because then you're afraid, oh, what are they going to think? Are they going to try to take my kids away from me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Are they going to decide that I'm an unfit mother? Which, unfortunately, happened. So.
Yeah, we just have to keep doing the work. Keep educating.
Yep.
So now that you're a doula, how do you work with moms in terms of, like, postpartum depression? And is it something you, just like for any doulas out there who are listening and are like, I want to help my moms, but I don't know how to broach the subject?
You know, it depends on it depends on the relationship that I have with them. If it's strictly a professional relationship and I don't really know them personally, which is not usually the case. Most of my doula clients are friends long before they get pregnant and ask me to help. But if it is just a client, then I watch them very closely. I make sure that they are well-educated on the subject, because I think that that's one of the things that gets glossed over the most in all of the prenatal classes. It's kind of like a, oh yeah, by the way, watch for these symptoms. Here's a little handout. And then that's it. And, you know, plus I think that, you know, the vast majority of women, especially in their first pregnancies, go into it kind of with this rose-colored glasses thing, where they think everything's going to be perfect and beautiful and awesome. And I'm here to ground you in reality. Shit happens. So,
literally. You know,
right, like, these are the things that can happen, and things can go bad, and, you know, and if any of these things happen, then, you know, it's concerning, and if any of these things happen, then you definitely need to talk to your doctor, and if anything, these things happen, then this is an emergency. You know, trying to make sure that people have those resources. So I do a lot of patient education, you know, with all of my clients, like a ton of it, ahead of time, and then afterwards, I just really monitor them. I think, usually I meet with them at least a couple of times before they even go back for their postpartum checks, you know, because I'll meet with them like within the first couple of days after they get discharged, and then usually within the first week or two again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's early still for some of the symptoms to start showing up, but sometimes they do. And, you know, because there tends to be this like 72-hour, I call it the 72-hour wall crash after delivery, where almost every mom I've ever encountered, and of course there are exceptions to this rule, but, you know, 72 hours after delivery, most moms will all of a sudden, you're shedding those hormones so fast that you just cry, and you don't know why, and you can't control it. You're just like overly emotional, and, you know, so for some moms, that's all they ever deal with. Like, that's their little speed bump, and then they get on with it, and everything sorts itself out, but, you know, not all of us get there, obviously. So having been through it, you know, I'm definitely more aware of what the symptoms can be. And I also do a pretty good inventory of their risk factors before delivery, too, as far as, like, pre-existing mental health concerns or difficulties they've had with the pregnancy or relationship difficulties with their partner, you know, financial stressors, all of those things, because we know that all of those things make it more likely that a mom's going to deal with postpartum depression. So,
and they're all touchy subjects that people don't want to talk about too much.
They are, and, you know, part of why I share my story as freely and often as I do is because I think that, you know, when women, especially the women that I'm helping directly, you know, they know me, and, you know, a lot of them don't know that the things that I've been through, you know, I put a more human face on it for them. And, you know, like, just because these things happen doesn't mean that you're, like, you know, in this other category of people who are now incapable of having relationships and taking care of their children and all of those things. Because there's such a perception that that's how it is. So I do tend to tell people my story.
Well, yeah, it humanizes.
Right. I mean, it puts a face on it, and it makes it more real to them, I think. Because, you know, I mean, when you're just talking, I mean, people just kind of, their faces gloss over when you tell them statistics. But if you can say, hey, this is what actually happened to me, you know, it's different. It's a different conversation.
Yeah, and when everyone knows that Brooke Shields had it, and I love that Brooke Shields wrote a book and came forth, but there's just a difference between celebrities having things and regular non-celebrities.
Right. Well, and the reality is there's so many more women that deal with this than will ever talk about it publicly. I mean, we don't even really know what the statistics are because there are so few women that are willing to be open about the fact that they haven't. So, you know, we don't really know. You know, like, we can talk about the statistics all you want, but are they accurate?
Right, because we're self-reporting.
Really, right.
And then there's women who don't even know that they have it or had it.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, especially when you're dealing with women who have, you know, because there are so many risk factors for it, you know, financial stress, relationship stress, abuse of any kind. I mean, you know, when you've got women who already have, you know, kind of the deck stacked against them, I think, you know, even somebody who's in a position where they're in a supported relationship and their financial situation is stable and all of those other things, even in the most ideal of situations, I think most women will still try to rationalize what's going on with them and try to, like, explain it away, mm-hmm. at least for a while. You know, where if you've got all of these other stressors that are contributing to why you may develop postpartum depression, it makes you even more likely to explain it away and say, well, it's not, it's just because of this, you know, like, so it's easier to be dismissive of the actual symptoms because you can always just say, oh, well, it's this, or it's this, or it's the money, or it's the, you know, my boyfriend leaving me, or whatever. You know, so I think it makes it more likely to show up, and it makes it more likely to diagnose it and treat it because there are so many other contributing factors.
Yeah, it is. I never thought of it that way, but that's, yeah, it would be easier to sort of gloss over it because right. you're having money issues. Like, well, then everything will be better when we don't have money issues. But maybe
right,
the money,
right, right.
even if the money issues caused it, like once you go down that path, for some people, it's like, you know, once you establish those brain patterns, you have to dismantle them.
Right.
So even
it's like once that switch gets flipped, it doesn't really matter why the switch got flipped. It just is flipped.
Yeah. So even if you take away the financial issues, the switch was probably still flipped, and you're going to have to do something to unflip it.
Right. So I think and I think the reason why I say that I'm fairly confident that there are so many women who have never known that what they went through was postpartum depression is because I have friends that are, my mom's age, our parents' age, that have told me about the way things were when they had their kids, and they still are working through trying to deal with what happened to them, 40 or 50 years later.
Yeah, and they're not supposed to work through those feelings, because then you're supposedly somehow invalidating motherhood and your children's
right.
childhood. And it's like, no, that's not it. It's
right. Right.
I wish I,
right. And there's this huge idea in mothering in general, that all that matters is the healthy baby. Well, if the mom's not healthy, the baby's not going to be in a great position. And if all we ever do is we worry about whether the baby is healthy, you're ignoring everything about the mother, and you're just missing everything about the mother. And the baby is 100% dependent on her.
Yeah, and if if you find out as an adult, like, oh, your mom committed suicide because she had postpartum depression, but don't worry, it's cool because we were really worried about you.
Right.
Then you're putting it all on you're blaming the kid for all of this.
Well, I think a lot, a part of it, I think, is generational. At least I hope it's generational. Older generations were more likely to, oh, it'll be fine, just to move on and, put your big girl panties on, that whole mindset of, you'll get through it, it'll be fine, we'll just never talk about it again, and it'll be fine. There's a lot of that I can say in my family for sure, their way of coping with just about anything that's happened is that they just largely ignore it. But that doesn't ever make it go away. It just means you're not dealing with it right now. It doesn't mean that it's magically better.
Yeah, when the big ogre
is kind of passing the buck.
Yeah, when the big ogre is lurking in the basement, it stays there until you scare it away.
Right. And, and some of the women that I've talked to who, very clearly had traumatic deliveries and probably had postpartum depression went on to develop lifelong depression and anxiety issues. And you can't help but think that if this had been caught and treated, back then, would their experience with their children have been different? Would they have been different mothers? Would they have been different people? Would they still be struggling now? I don't have the answers to that, but, I have to wonder if, there's this epidemic of women who just were never treated because they were never heard. Nobody ever listened to them.
Yeah, I mean, I just think about this woman I met this past week who came to my support group, and I wasn't, and it's a peer support group, but, and her sister-in-law was there with her, and we could not get through to her, and her daughter has, very, very mild flathead, like, doesn't need a helmet or anything, and she has gone to a place where all of her thoughts have changed, and she's gotten really anxious and isn't sleeping. And she's like, I just need to get through this and process this, and it's okay. And I was just sitting there like, I can't make you see what's going on until you see it. And
right.
It just pains me so much to see, like, that something was flipped.
Right.
It's not that you have to process the flat head. It's that something was going to trigger all of this for you, and that's what came through and triggered it.
Right. Well, and once you're in that anxiety cycle, it's like so hard to get out of it because, the obsessive thoughts that you are, especially when there's something wrong with your baby, even if it's something that's, seemingly innocuous, if you have, we all have this vision of what motherhood's supposed to be like, and it's very rarely ever as easy as we think it's going to be. And if you get stuck into the cycle of where you're anxious about things all the time, it can become so debilitating that you don't, you can't even function.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's when you literally worry about every single thing and for me personally, like, I look back and I know now that I had crippling anxiety through all of my pregnancies. It just was never treated because I never really admitted that it was there.
How are you doing these days with the anxiety?
You know. Right now, it's been a bad week. I can say that for sure. I don't know. I had January was really hard for me. It's one of those things where sometimes I get into such a bad place that I have a hard time even teasing out what's actually going on in my head because I have so many issues. I'm like, is this the postpartum? Is this the anxiety? Like, what's happening? Like, are you guys getting along in there? Are you fighting? Like, I wish, my brain had, a decoder section somewhere on a cheat sheet, but it doesn't.
Just a daily
memo. I still have issues with intrusive thoughts. And my son is 2.5. My youngest is 2.5, and I still have intrusive thoughts. I mean, it's not all the time like it was. And even with him, it was never as bad as it was with my daughter. But it still happens. He's 2.5, and you just get to the point where you're like, is this ever going to go away? and the anxiety, and this is going to sound like a total cop-out, but, a lot of my anxiety, my husband, knows that I, irrationally worry about things, and he knows that it's irrational, and I've told him, I can't explain to you why these things happen, why I worry about the things that I worry about sometimes. And so he knows that, there are just times that he's going to have to step in and do some of the things that I should otherwise be doing, mm-hmm. because I just can't. For instance, my son, my oldest, went to New York last week on a band trip, and I couldn't take him to the airport. I physically can't do it because I'm so worried about, what's going to happen, and is the plane going to be fine, and are they going to get there okay, and is he going to lose his money, is he going to lose his ID, is he going to get lost, are they going to, it's a million things. So I just can't. I physically can't do it. So, my husband just knows, that there's certain times where, if I send in, the mayday signal, you got to take this one. I want to say that it's a coping mechanism, mostly to preserve some sense of normalcy for my kids. But I don't know that that's really what it is. I don't know that it's necessarily a coping mechanism. Maybe it's just my way of avoiding it. I don't know. Does that make sense?
It does, in that it doesn't. Does that make sense?
Right. And that's the thing, is that, you can't come at it from a rational perspective.
Right.
Because it's not rational. And that's the hardest part about anxiety for me, is that you usually can't reason your way out of it. Sometimes you can't. For me, one of my things is that I kind of have to worst-case scenario everything. And then, run every worst-case scenario out to their completion so that I'll be fully prepared for, what could happen. So I tell people that, I'm actually a really, really, really good and useful and resourceful person in a time of crisis, because my brain can do this stuff so quickly that I'm actually, really good in the moment. But if you ask me to, go have coffee in 3 days, I'm going to stay in my pajamas and not shower and come up with 16 excuses why I can't do it.
That makes a lot of sense.
So it's sometimes it's an asset. Most of the time I wouldn't say that it's an asset, but I've mostly learned how to deal with it. Mostly. I mean, I obviously still have moments, but that's what Adam Ansler.
But writing helps.
The realist. Yeah, so.
Sorry, my phone just started blowing up about, that issue.
Yeah, I do.
The Voldemort we shall not discuss right now.
Yeah, we're not that 500-pound elephant in the room we are not talking about. No.
Nope, there's no 500-pound elephant in the room right now.
No, I don't even know what you're talking about. It's crazy.
What? Elephants? I don't know them. So. What? Before we...
This is one of those times where my ADD actually comes in handy. See, they sometimes serve a purpose.
So, Before we say goodbye, is there anything else you want to tell the listeners?
What do I want to tell listeners? You know, one of the things that I did want to talk about is there seems to be this, I mean, there's a couple things. One of which is that if you need a medication, just go get medication. Like, we don't shame people for having hypertension, and we don't tell them, oh, well, you know, just think happy thoughts and you won't have high blood pressure. Like, we don't do that. So if you need medication, go get medication. That would be my first thing. The second thing for me is that with my last child, I knew that in almost complete certainty that I would end up with postpartum depression because I had had it in so many different forms before. And, you know, I was admitting these things openly and writing about them. And so, you know, I basically told everybody I knew, hey, keep an eye on me. like, invade my privacy. Ask me how I'm really doing and then ask me 16 more times until I tell you the truth because I'm going to tell you that I'm fine and I'm not. You know, so I think that for me, when I knew that I was going to have issues, I kind of set things up intentionally to give myself the support network that I needed. And even with that, like, I gotta be honest, most people don't show up. You know, most people aren't who you want them to be or need them to be when you actually need them, which is a really unfortunate realization. But always ask more people than you're going to need because not everybody's going to show up. I think that's part of it. And the other thing for me is to, you know, whatever works for you is fine. Like, I think, you know, part of the stigma that's associated with this particular condition is that you get all these self-righteous moms on these message boards. I mean, like, the Baby Center message boards are, like, a perfect example of chaos and judgment. Because you get all of these moms who are like, well, this worked for me, and then this is the only thing that will work, and if you do anything else, then you're just wrong, and you're endangering your baby, and I'm going to report you to CPS. Which that's so, like, goes against everything that, you know, we're trying to do here. If yoga helps you and meditation helps you, that's fantastic. It's not going to help somebody else, though. If, you know, and, you know, because, like, for me, I encapsulated my placenta for my last one. Didn't have any idea if it would help. I don't know if it actually did help. I know psychosomatically, like, psychologically, like, there's a whole placebo effect thing that goes on with it. You know, so if you think something's going to help, then in all likelihood, it might help a little bit, even if it's not actually helping.
Because a placebo effect is a placebo effect, so go for it.
Right, because it's a legitimate thing.
Right.
And so if you're taking steps to help protect your wellness, whatever those steps are, as long as you're not setting up some other problem down the road, do it and own it and don't feel bad about it and don't let somebody else tell you that that's not okay. You know, if you need to take medication, fine. If you need to go to therapy, fine. If you need to go do yoga 3 times a week, fine. Like, whatever works for you. Just don't live under the assumption for even a second that it's going to be the cure for somebody else. Because we're all different. And we need to be supporting each other, not telling each other how to live and how to get better. Just we need to be supporting each other in the effort of getting better.
Yeah, and if someone's not supporting you out there, then give yourself a blank check to, like, not have that person in your life while you need to recover.
Right. And ultimately, I think that's, you know, that's the biggest lesson when you go through any of these things in life is that, you know, you figure out very quickly who your people are and who your people are not. And if somebody has not shown up for you, remember that. Like, you know that's not going to be your person. And that's okay. You know, like, they might have whatever their own reasons are for why they can't do it, or maybe they've got something going on in their lives or what, you know, whatever. Like, at the end of the day, you just learn a lot about people, and you learn who you can lean on and who you shouldn't ever bother leaning on. And, you know, that's valuable information going forward in life. And unfortunately, it's the kind of thing that you only ever learn when you need people the most.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish it wasn't that way. I really wish it wasn't that way, especially like this week, for example. but that's how it is. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's why, you know, sometimes for me, especially with this last experience with postpartum depression, you know, a lot of my support network that I had created for myself was online. You know, I mean, a lot of people that were the ones who were actually there for me this time, some of them I still haven't met in person. And that's okay. You know, like, I get a lot of crap from certain people in my life who try to tell me that, you know, the internet's not worth my time or my energy, and that it's, you know, these aren't real people and these aren't real relationships. And I totally call bullshit on that. I entirely call bullshit on it, because some of these women helped save my life.
Yeah, and it's like, this is such a highly stigmatized illness that, I mean, it's easier to find grief support for the loss of a pet than it is to find support for postpartum mood disorder. So I had to start a support group here in Pasadena, and I love the face-to-face, but I needed the online too, because the face-to-face did not exist in my community at all.
Right. And, you know, I mean, especially when you're talking about the degrees of severity, like, you know, even within the women that I talked to online, I mean, like, some of the things that I mean, because I was borderline, I was, you know, to the point of being borderline psychosis for a while, and maybe even flirted with it, dipping my toe in it at times, and some, you know, I obviously I'm still here, but that's not very common, and you're not really going to find a lot of people who can relate to that in real life, and it, the kind of thing where, you know, the only way that you would ever know if somebody has a situation like that is that you've got to put yourself out there. And then 9 times out of 10, I would say even more than 9 times out of 10, like 9.75 times out of 10, the other person that you're telling what's happening in your head to looks at you like you're insane. And, you know, so it requires like a level of vulnerability that I'm just not willing to do anymore with most people. Where if I can go online and I can be like, hey, so this is what happened to me. Can anyone relate? And then, you know, all of a sudden you've got 4 people like, oh my God, that happened to me too.
Immediately judgment free.
Right. It's a completely different situation. And, you know, for me, especially with my last baby, you know, all of my, you know, my mommy friends, you know, that I've made over the years, primarily through my older kids, they're done having kids. I'm the one who still has a toddler. I'm the only one. So, you know, I don't have that network physically anymore. And even if I did, none of them have ever had the experiences that I've had to the degree that I've had them. You know, so like, I just don't have as much in common with people in person that I do online. And it's hard to explain that to people who don't get it, and I've just kind of stopped trying. So, I promise you there are people out there who understand. Like, even if you think, like, you're the only person in the world that ever had these thoughts, because, like, God knows I did, I promise you you're not. There are lots of us. We just, you know, we tend to congregate quietly in chat rooms on support groups and stuff.
But you can find us. We're there.
Yes, you can find us. We're not scary.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening and for being here. I'm so glad I have this podcast. I'm so glad I'm doing this. I enjoy this so much. This feels like my calling, or one of my callings. And I think that has made the end of postpartum progress easier for me than for others, because this is my real thing, and I don't, this is giving me meaning and giving a purpose, and, you know, a higher purpose than just cleaning poop diapers, which is a purpose, but sometimes a disgusting one. So thank you for being here on this adventure with me. Postpartum depression, and let me continue. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to be here for a long time. I have lots of interviews lined up, and I'm going to keep sharing other women's stories, and getting those stories out there so that we are not silenced and we can learn from each other and lean on each other. And stories are just so powerful. So, postpartum depression, very lonely, isolating illness, but you are not alone. You did not do this to yourself. And with proper help, you will make a full recovery. I love you and have a great week.